From the heart of our nation's capital in Washington, D.C., bringing compelling interviews, insightful analysis, taking you beyond the headlines and sound bites into conversations with our nation's leaders and newsmakers, all from a biblical worldview. Sitting in for Tony is today's host, Jody Heiss.
Well, good afternoon. Welcome to this Friday edition of Washington Watch. I am your host, Jody Heiss, Senior Vice President here at the Family Research Council and President of FRC Action. We've got a lot coming your way. Let's begin with this.
Today, the mastermind of this day of sheer evil is no more. Yahya Sinwar is dead. He was killed in Rafah by the brave soldiers of the Israel Defense Forces. While this is not the end of the war in Gaza, it's the beginning of the end.
That, of course, was Israel Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu yesterday. He was announcing the death of Hamas leader Yahya Sinwar, who was the architect of the October 7th attack on Israel. And, of course, all this new development has many asking if this is a time for optimism in Israel. Could this development actually open the door for the Israeli military to fully conquer Hamas and bring the hostages home? Well, joining me here in just a few moments will be CBN News Middle East Bureau Chief Chris Mitchell, and we'll be talking about that. And among the comments that Vice President Kamala Harris made during her sit-down interview with Fox News this week was this.
I have spent a significant part of my career going after people who present a threat to the safety of the American people and cross our border with the intent of doing us harm and cross our border illegally. And I will do that work as vice president. I take that work quite seriously.
Wow, quite hard to believe her claim that she's tough on crime, when really we all fully are aware that this administration not only allows lawlessness, but has actually fueled it. And earlier this week, Tony spoke with a reporter that's covering the surge of sex trafficking of minors, which, by the way, has more than tripled under the Biden-Harris administration. But federal whistleblower Tara Rodas will be joining me further to unpack this absolutely heartbreaking development. And recently, Congressman Greg Stube sat down with Tony for an interview that is going to be featured exclusively on FRC's Stand Firm app, which I'll tell you how you can get that here in just a moment. But I encourage you to check out this interview. I found it so encouraging. I'd actually like to give you a snippet, a preview of that a little bit later on in the program. And then finally, after a busy week, as always, David Clawson and I will examine the biblical response to a number of the stories that have been dominating the news and social media this week. We'll be doing so in our weekly Worldview segment. So we've got a lot coming your way today. First, as I mentioned just a little while ago, I want to tell you how you can get hold of the Stand Firm app. And we have a brand new piece on there that I want to tell you about. FRC Action has just released its 2024 Voter Toolkit. Voter Toolkit. It's a comprehensive toolkit of resources that you can use and prepare not only for yourself, but give to others. It's an app that is exclusively on the Stand Firm app. This toolkit includes voter guides, has an election prayer guide, it's got party platform comparisons, much more. It is a complete toolkit for you. You can get it at the Stand Firm app, or you can text the word toolkit. That's one word, toolkit, to 67742. And of course, as always, our website is tonyperkins.com. Tons and tons of information available there for you, tonyperkins.com. All right, let's jump into the news for today. After the death of Hamas leader Yahya Sinwar yesterday, the Biden-Harris administration expressed optimism that the death of the architect of the October 7th terrorist attack on Israel could possibly lead to a new path forward for the terrorist group. But in a televised remark today, Sinwar's longtime deputy, Khalil al-Yahya, he struck a defiant tone. He said that Hamas is going to continue right down the same path that it's been going. Meanwhile, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has made it very clear that Israel's not going to relent in its war against Hamas. And you may have heard it just a few moments ago, but he said that this is not the end of the war in Gaza. It is the beginning of the end. So what can we expect in the coming days? Joining me now to discuss this is Chris Mitchell. He's a Middle East Bureau Chief at CBN News. Chris, always great to have you on the program. Thank you for taking time out of your schedule to be with us.
It's great to be with you, Jody.
All right, let's begin with your take on the death of Sinwar. This is big news.
It's huge news, Jody, and something people have been hoping for, praying for well over a year now since October 7th. It, as Netanyahu said, it's really not the end, but the beginning of the end. And you can see that the war wouldn't have ended without Sinwar either being captured or killed. I'll tell you some of the reaction here in Israel. Israel Hayom, it's one of Israel's major newspapers. It had a headline in Hebrew, and I'll read the biblical reference. It's from Psalm chapter 18, verse 37. It says, I pursued my enemies and I overtook them. And then earlier, Yoav Gallant, he's the defense minister, he did on X, he quoted Leviticus chapter 26, verse 7. It says, and you shall chase your enemies and they shall fall before you by the sword. So there's a lot of relief here in Israel, a lot of celebrations yesterday about the mastermind, the architect of October 7th that created so much havoc, so much misery here in Israel, and the worst attack against the Jewish people and the state of Israel since the Holocaust.
Yeah, it really is amazing. And reports I've seen, Chris, it would indicate that even the Israeli military was surprised that they were able to encounter Sinwar above ground while just doing routine patrol. What do you make of the circumstance that led to all of this?
Well, some of the backstory, Jody, is the fact that it had been reported that Sinwar was surrounded by maybe as many as 20 hostages with a suitcase full of explosives ready to detonate if any attempt was made to capture him or release the hostages. But what happened actually is in Rafah, in one of those sections in Rafah, there was reservists and trainees that were actually sort of mopping up in that area. And they came across three terrorists who came into that that particular building, and they pursued them. There was a tank shell that was lobbed in there. And actually, so it wasn't a sort of a special operations, an elite unit. It was really just simply reservists and trainees that came across him. When they discovered the body, saw his face, they thought, well, this looks a lot like Sinwar. So a lot of people are saying it was a miracle and something that that really just opened up for these soldiers at this time. And actually, many people think he was very close to what's called the Philadelphia Corridor, which is the border between Egypt and Gaza. He had false passports and may have been trying to escape out of Gaza into Egypt and trying to save himself.
Wow. Well, I would just add, Chris, and I agree, this is a miracle, but I would just say it is yet another miracle that we have seen. There just seems so many things that are unexplainable other than the good hand of God looking over Israel at this time. It's just amazing, and this is yet another example of that. We have some Hamas leaders, nonetheless, that are remaining defiant. I referenced one just a few moments ago, and this comes even in spite of Benjamin Netanyahu referring to this as just being the beginning of the end. What do you think is next in all of this? What is this development going to lead to?
Well, I think, first of all, Jody, you know, one of the questions that people began to ask themselves, including myself, right after Sinwar was killed, was what is this going to mean for the hostages? Are they going to be released? What does this mean for Hamas? Are they going to soften their tone? Perhaps if once their leader is done, would they surrender? The Hamas leader that you quoted, you know, gave one indication. They're not going to lessen their stand. And they made two demands, the same demands that Yahya Sinwar had made for months. First of all, there would be a ceasefire, and then there would be a withdrawal of IDF forces. Those are both non-starters for Israel. And then the question many people are asking, what about the hostages? Will they be released? Could they be released? It seems like Israel will continue to do what they can to make sure that Hamas is fully defeated, that it won't be able to govern Gaza anymore, and the release of the hostages. Those are the three official war goals at the very beginning of this conflict back in October, Jody. But what's next is really the big question right now. It looks like more of the same in terms of the military action in a pessimistic view of the hostages right now. But as you said, this was a miracle with now with Sinwar being killed. And that's a result, many people believe, of so many people around the world praying for the release of the hostages and for the defeat of this terror group.
And it looks like we're just one step closer, at least to the defeat, and we need to continue praying for those hostages. Of course, Sinwar was based in Gaza, and he had some of his deputies that live in exile in Qatar. So what does all this mean, Chris, for the overall Hamas command structure? This has to be an enormous blow to their structure.
Yeah, very much so. And it follows a year of fighting the IDF forces where they have killed perhaps as many as 20,000 or more terrorists and, you know, decimated their infrastructure, their tunnel systems, much of their command and control, as many as many of their munitions. You mentioned the top leaders of Hamas. Halad Meshaal is maybe the last remaining one. He's in Qatar. He's in Doha, and he's also living in luxury. And it also brings up the question about the influence of Qatar. Many people have questioned that. They're hosting these Hamas leaders, and also have been funding Hamas for years, and actually giving them billions of dollars through that time. So it remains to be seen what will happen to that leadership. But as you said, it really has decimated the leadership of Hamas. And this follows several weeks where Israel has been able to decimate and literally decapitate much of the leader of Hezbollah up in Lebanon.
Absolutely remarkable. Well, Chris, as we have this latest development and hopeful developments can unfold as a result of this, how would you say we can most effectively pray for Israel and the leadership right now?
Well, I would say pray for the release of the hostages that so many have been praying fervently for a long time. Pray for the comfort for their family members, and continue to pray for wisdom for the leadership of Israel, for Prime Minister Netanyahu specifically. I really think he's showing himself to be the Churchill of our time, really on the tip of the spear fighting for Western civilization. Pray for the peace of Jerusalem, and pray for comfort for the Israeli people that have gone through so much, as well as the Jewish people around the world. And they're celebrating right now, Tony, the Feast of Tabernacles, Sukkot, celebrating and commemorating how God provided, protected the Israelites during their time in the wilderness and brought them into the promised land. Here we are, thousands of years later, they're back in the promised land.
Absolutely remarkable. Well, Lord, you've heard this request, and we ask you to answer these prayers in Jesus' name, in Jesus' name. Chris Mitchell, Middle East Bureau Chief for CBN News, thank you, as always, for joining us. God bless you.
Thank you, Tony. Great to be with you.
All right, friends, after the break, I'll be speaking with former HHS staffer there, who is one of the whistleblowers who exposed the human trafficking that's been enabled by the Biden-Harris administration. It's heartbreaking, but we got to bring it to you so that you're aware. Stay tuned. More coming your way right after the break.
We humbly, Father, bow before you in these moments that we have together, that this wouldn't just be any other conference, but that literally, Lord, you would reset our hearts to be in alignment with your word, that you would reset the city of Washington, D.C. to be in realignment with your word.
There's no politician, including Trump, that can affect the soul of this nation. You're the only one. The answer's not in the State House, and it's not going to be in the White House. It's got to be in your own house. It's got to be in the Church of God. It's got to be in His house.
Our principles never bend to politicians.
Yes.
Our principles never bend to politicians. By God's grace, it will be the other way around. Politicians will bend to our biblically based child protective principles. principles.
No matter what comes in November, no matter if it doesn't go the way you want or I want or the things we prayed for, our focus and priorities do not change as Christians. We fight against evil. We stand for truth. We tell people the good news of Jesus Christ. We tell them the truth.
So let's not be discouraged. Don't lose heart. Don't lose the faith. Stand now strong, because the Lord has given us the great privilege of living in a time when our choices matter, when our lives matter, when our courage matters. So let's stand together and save this great country. God bless the United States of America.
There are 40 million self-described evangelical Christians who do not vote in a presidential election. If half of those people who sit in church on their blessed assurance would pray, stand, and vote, we would change every election in this country from the school board all the way to the White House.
All it takes, friends, is one generation for us to lose what is valuable, important, and sacred. Every generation has the opportunity to preserve what is right, what is godly, what is good about the United States of America, or to shirk our responsibilities and to watch what happens in just one generation in our country.
This may not be an easy task, but we are living in a moment of challenge, but also of great opportunity. And we know, always, that we are not alone, that His Spirit empowers us and protects us, and that He can do the unimaginable. Dobbs, after all, was never supposed to happen.
Father, we thank You. You have entrusted us with this moment in history, and I pray that we would be found faithful, and that as a result of our faithfulness to You, that thousands, millions would come into the kingdom as they would experience the forgiveness of sin and the new life that is found only in Jesus Christ. Amen.
Good afternoon and welcome back to Washington Watch. I am your Friday host, Jody Heiss. Glad to have you on board with us. All right, earlier this week, Tony discussed how the Biden-Harris administration's failure to manage our southern border has literally enabled the exploitation and sex trafficking of minors. Now, this story certainly has been going on for years, but new details continue to emerge that paint an absolutely heartbreaking picture of the abuse that is taking place. Just within the past week, for example, more than 150 unaccompanied migrant children as young as 5 years old. It's 5 years old. They've been sent across the Rio Grande into the small town of Eagle Pass. So, is this administration not only allowing lawlessness, but actually fueling it? Well, joining me now to discuss this is Tara Rodas. She worked for the Department of Health and Human Services, and she was one of the whistleblowers who exposed the human trafficking problem that's taking place that has been enabled by the Biden-Harris administration. Tara, thank you for joining us on Washington Watch. It's an honor to have you with us.
Well, Jody, thank you so much. It's an honor to be here. And I really appreciate you shining a light on what we now know is government-sponsored, taxpayer-funded child trafficking. I can assure you I never thought I'd be saying that.
Yeah, and I can assure you I never thought I'd be hearing that. It's just absolutely unthinkable. And of course, you were among the whistleblowers who exposed all of this. So were it not for people like you, we would not even be aware of what's been going on. But look, you've shared your story before, but why don't you just briefly share it again for some of our viewers and listeners who may not be aware?
Sure. So at the beginning of 2021, the Biden-Harris administration made a call to all federal employees. And they said, look, we have a crisis with these unaccompanied children on the border. And they asked employees across the government to leave their agencies to help with their crisis. And I raised my hand and said, here I am, send me. I thought I was going to be coloring and doing puzzles with children. My husband is actually from El Salvador, so I'm a Spanish speaker. And I thought I could be that person who would be there to greet the children and, you know, find out what are their plans about coming to America and living the American dream. And sadly, Jody, it didn't take very long for those illusions to evaporate, because I saw children in crisis and children didn't know the people we were sending them to. And then it didn't take very long to discover that the children's story and this sponsor story, they don't match. And then children began to tell us the truth, that they were lured here, that they were told, you know, if you leave your family, so this is family separation. If you leave your family and you come here, I'm going to pay the journey because you're special. You're going to have to live with me until you pay off your debt. But so, for example, instead of making $2.50 a day, I'm going to pay you $6 an hour. So these children, some of whom cannot even speak Spanish, they speak Mayan dialects, they are vulnerable indigenous people of Guatemala. They're lured here under the promise that from they're going to go from $2.50 a day to $6 an hour, and they and their families believe they're going to be Elon Musk rich. It's horrific. It's terrible. And then these children are put in modern-day slavery. Children have reported being sexually abused, being pimped out by their sponsors. You know, we put forward that some of these sponsors are actually gang members. You know, my husband is from El Salvador, and MS-13 and 18th Street Gang are serious, violent criminal organizations. And we revealed that some of these sponsors actually are gang members. So it's really horrific to know that with taxpayer dollars, these vulnerable children are being shipped to known bad actors, and the United States is the white glove delivery system. We're the FedEx of children from the border to traffickers. There are people, and yeah, they are exploiting our system, and they're exploiting good people with good hearts who want to help the kids. I had no idea children were being trafficked. So I think it's a shocking story that people need to know about. This is not humanitarian. This isn't helping the children. They're in slavery.
Absolutely. And it is for that reason that you have called this government-sponsored, taxpayer-funded child trafficking. How is it that such a horrifying thing has now become a partisan issue?
Yes, well, that is the shocker, because everybody should want to protect and defend children. So if you're not in the box of protect and defend children, I don't think that, you know, that puts you outside of all political realms, right? At this point, we're talking it's good versus evil, right? Nobody thinks that children should be pimped out by sponsors. And sadly, failed policies and policymakers have created this crisis, because they rolled back the ability for people to come across the border. They made it simple so that vetting is not being done. And then they opened the floodgates for these children to come across to be reunited to these people. And so you have criminal actors crossing the border, and then we're shipping children to those criminal actors. It's just simple as that. And it's
unbelievable. Tara, I in the legacy media, they've been a part of that. We all remember how they were panicking over some 1,500 or so unaccounted children during the Trump administration. And now they have, by rolling back those policies, have enabled this crisis to get worse. Final comment, we've got less than a minute to go. Final comment that the American people need to know.
Sure. So in 2021, when we began reporting cases, we thought there were only maybe 50 children involved. When I testified before Congress in 2023, we knew 85,000 children were missing. A recent DHS report showed that 320,000 children now are unaccounted for. And as we just learned from the Free Press, this sex trafficking of children has more than tripled under this administration. These are failed policies. We need people who are going to put sane policies in place. We need to rescue children, and we need to seriously prosecute criminals.
Thank you so, so much, Tara Rodas, for your courage to come forward as a whistleblower, to put the spotlight on this and to deal with it courageously. And thank you for joining us today on Washington Watch.
Thank you, Jody, and thank you for shining a light on government-sponsored, taxpayer-funded child trafficking.
That's right. All right, friends, after the break, I want to give you a snippet of an interview Tony had with Florida Congressman Greg Stube. You don't want to miss this. We'll be back right after the break.
Everything we do begins as an idea. Before there can be acts of courage, there must be the belief that some things are worth sacrificing for. Before there can be marriage, there is the idea that man should not be alone. Before there was freedom, there was the idea that individuals are created equal. It's true that all ideas have consequences, but we're less aware that all consequences are the fruit of ideas. Before there was murder, there was hate. Before there was a Holocaust, there was the belief by some people that other people are undesirable. Our beliefs determine our behavior, and our beliefs about life's biggest questions determine our worldview. Where did I come from? Who decides what is right and wrong? What happens when I die? Our answers to these questions explain why people see the world so differently. Debates about abortion are really disagreements about where life gets its value. Debates over sexuality and gender and marriage are really disagreements about whether the rules are made by us or for us. What we think of as political debates are often much more than that. They're disagreements about the purpose of our lives and the source of truth. As Christians, our goal must be to think biblically about everything. Our goal is to help you see beyond red and blue, left and right, to see the battle of ideas at the root of it all. Our goal is to equip Christians with a biblical worldview and help them advance and defend the faith in their families, communities, and the public square. Cultural renewal doesn't begin with campaigns and elections. It begins with individuals turning from lies to truth. But that won't happen if people can't recognize a lie and don't believe truth exists. We want to help you see the spiritual war behind the political war, the truth claims behind the press release, and the forest from the trees.
Good afternoon and welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm honored to be your Friday host, Jody Heiss, and thank you so much for being a part of the program. All right, for those of you who are not aware, the Family Research Council has a new app, and really it's a whole lot more than just an app. It's a platform that serves as a state-of-the-art digital community where followers of Christ can connect, grow, receive encouragement, stay up to date on news from a biblical worldview, and literally be empowered to defend the faith. And we want you to become part of it. It's called Stand Firm app, and you can download it at the App Store on your phone or Google Play. You can also text the word APP. That would just be APP. Text APP to 67742. You're going to love this new platform, and we want you to benefit from it. All right. The new app has a whole lot of things on it, but there's a new limited edition that you're going to find on there called Defending the Faith, Profiles in Leadership, where we'll feature there on the app exclusive sit-down interviews that go beyond politics and policies. Well, available right now is Tony's recent interview with Florida Congressman Greg Stube. And in it, Congressman Stube shares his faith journey and how it was shaped by a miraculous recovery that he experienced following a life-threatening accident. Here's just a preview of that interview.
Congressman Greg Stube, thanks so much for sitting down with us.
Anytime.
So this is kind of stepping back from the policies and the politics, and it's more of a personal look at some of the members of Congress and what brought them here to Washington, D.C. Before we get to Washington, I talked about in your intro, you know, you've served in the military. You come from a family of public servants. Your father retired as sheriff in Florida. And I guess I should put up front, I know a little bit more about the family because we're related. We're actually cousins.
Yep.
So know a little bit about the family. Let's start with your faith journey, because that plays a role in why you are here.
Yeah. And it plays a role as to the steps it took to get here. We were very prayerful when the seat was opened. I was in the state Senate at the time. We were in the middle of session, and Tom Rooney announced that he wasn't going to run for re-election. And my wife and I started praying about what we should do. because, you know, a congressional seat, once it's open, because there's no term limits, you never know when it's going to be open again. Right. You have to kind of seize that opportunity if you're going to do it. And we got many confirmation through scripture. My wife was just doing her daily verse, and we got confirmation after confirmation that's the direction the Lord wants us to go. So within a week, we made a decision, announced. I had like 2 or 3 months before qualifying, and that certainly charted the path for us. And throughout the campaign, I wasn't the Washington, D.C. establishment pick. We were out fundraised. We were outgunned by the different people in Washington that were supporting my opponent. And every time it was, we needed something, checks showed up at the door. There was an outside group that got involved for me and helped tremendously. And so God made the resources available that I needed to put in place and had set it all up. I had such a hard Senate primary, and the majority of the Senate district was in the new congressional district. So I had knocked on 20,000 doors
just
2 years before I ran for Congress, which, again, we didn't know that it was setting the stage for us to run for Congress. And it worked out, and
You had to develop that ability to walk by faith and to be able to sense the voice of the Lord leading the Holy Spirit. Let's talk about your experience of coming to know the Lord.
Well, I grew up in a Methodist religious household. My grandfather on my mom's side was a Methodist minister, so I grew up in the church. But obviously growing up in the church is different than our faith walk. And I'd say about 5 years ago, my wife and I went through some challenges in our marriage, which has really strengthened our spiritual walk. We had found a church actually through Senator Rick Scott, because he was at an event in my district. We went to a Southern Baptist church before we were at the church we are at now, which gave us a biblical foundation for where we were and what we were doing. And everything was kind of charted before we got there. My wife will tell you the same thing, that like we didn't realize the steps that we were taking that was building our faith. I would say I would always probably identify myself as a Christian, even in high school and college. But I wouldn't say that my spirituality and faith and relationship with the Holy Spirit hasn't gotten as strong as it has in the last 5 or 6 years. And that was through what we went through politically and then what we went through personally. So I would say I've all been a Christian growing up. I would say I received my salvation, you know, probably as I started my political steps and being involved in a Baptist church. And then I would say made Jesus my Lord and Savior like the last 5 or 6 years.
Well, you've integrated that quite well. I've watched you, and you went through a situation 2 years ago. I lose track of time. You had an accident.
Yeah.
And that seems to have strengthened your faith even more.
I could spend an hour, 30 minutes talking about the miracles that were involved in me getting knocked off a ladder.
A very high ladder.
Yeah, I was 25, 30 feet up with a 20-inch bar chainsaw in my hand cutting a limb on our property. And the limb snatched free, hit the ladder. I went up into the air, fell straight to the ground.
That was Florida Congressman Greg Stube doing an exclusive sit-down interview with Tony Perkins, part of our Profiles in Leadership that you can find on the Stand Firm app that you can get at the App Store and Google Play, Stand Firm. I remember that accident well. I remember praying for Greg Stube. All right, after the break, we're going to wrap up the week with our Biblical Worldview segment with David Clawson. Stick around. We'll be back.
Jesus said in John 15, "These things I've spoken to you, that my joy may remain in you and that your joy may be full." In 2024, in these divided and uncertain times, how can this be possible? By abiding in him through his word. At Family Research Council, we want to help you do that, which is the reason for the Stand on the Word Bible reading plan. In just 10 to 15 minutes each day, you will have read the entire Bible in just 2 years. But more importantly, you will be abiding in him daily. Find our Bible reading plan at frc.org/Bible and join Tony Perkins each weekday for a 10-minute devotional inspired by the daily reading and designed to encourage you on this journey through the Bible. Listen on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube. And remember, the grass withers and the flower fades, but the word of our God will stand forever.
The world is hurting. Streets are filled with crime. Families are broken. Sin is celebrated and God is mocked. Everywhere we look, the wages of our sin are on full display. As Christians, we know that surrender to God's will is the solution to our biggest problems, but not everyone agrees. Even in church, we hear people say the most important thing is to be tolerant, that we shouldn't impose a morality on other people, and that loving our neighbor means celebrating what they do. But you can't do that. It's not that you don't love your neighbor, you do. But you care about God's opinion more than your neighbor's opinion, and this makes you different. In fact, sometimes it makes you feel alone, like you're the only one. But there is good news. You are not alone, not even close. Research has found that there are 59 million American adults who are a lot like you. There are millions of people around the country who are born again, deeply committed to practicing their faith, and believe the Bible is the reliable word of God. But that's not all. They're also engaged in our government. They're voters. They're more likely to be involved in their community, and they're making a difference in elections. The problem is that a lot of them feel alone, too. We want to change that. FRC wants to connect these 59 million Americans to speak the truth together, no matter the cost. If you want to learn more about this group and what it means to be a spiritually active, governance-engaged conservative, or if you want to find out if you are one of these sage cons yourself, go to frc.org/sagecon and take the quiz to find out. The world is hurting, and we have the solution. We can't do it alone, but we can do it if we work together. That's what we're working toward every day. Join us. Go to frc.org/sagecon, sagecon, to learn more. That's sagecon, sagecon, to learn more.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I am your Friday host, Jody Heiss. Glad to be with you. All right, just a quick reminder, FRC Action has just released its 2024 Voter Toolkit. Voter Toolkit. It's a comprehensive kit of resources to help prepare you for Election Day and to help you help others do the same. It is available exclusively in the Stand Firm app. Now look, this resource includes voter guides, an election prayer guide, platform comparisons, much, much more. So download the Stand Firm app. Stand Firm. You can get it at your Apple Store or wherever you get apps right now. Or you can text the word toolkit. That would be one word, toolkit. Text that to 67742. All right. It's been an extremely busy week, like it seems like most all of them are these days. So the last 7 days have been no exception, a lot going on. And as Christians, we always want to analyze and evaluate the news through the lens of a biblical worldview. And that's why I like to always conclude Friday's broadcast with a biblical worldview segment. And for today's segment, there's no shortage of things to talk about, and I'll be addressing it all with David Clawson, who, as you know, is the director here at FRC's Center for Biblical Worldview. David, thanks for joining us again. Always great to see you. Happy Friday.
Happy Friday. Great to be with you, Jody.
Okay, let's start with one of the big ones that we dealt with even just a little while ago. Hamas leader Yahya Sinwar was killed yesterday by the IDF forces operating in the Gaza Strip. How should Christians respond to this news?
Yeah, in my view, Jody, Christians should respond with gratitude and just be very excited that this happened, because Yahya Sinwar, this is a ruthless killer. And we've known this about him for decades, Jody. He's the alleged mastermind behind the horrific October 7th attack that killed 1,200 Israelis. And so I think as Christians looking at this, we need to realize this is a justified state action by the IDF, by the Israeli government. You know, Christians often, when we think about these kinds of issues, want to think about the Christian tradition of just war theory. And one of the things that the Christian just war theory teaches us is that war that is legitimate should never be for reasons of self-aggrandizement, kind of what you see Russia doing with Ukraine, but war that is just is inherently defensive. And what we see going on in the last year since the October 7th attack, Jody, is Israel going after the people and bringing them to justice. And I think that's the way we should respond, realizing this is, you know, in a fallen world where horrible actors exist, we should want to see a measure of justice. And, you know, one thing that I would note, Jody, is, again, this guy has been a bad actor on the world stage for decades. He back in the late 80s, actually was found guilty for killing IDF soldiers and actually killing Palestinians who he thought were in league with the Israelis. He got the nickname as the Butcher. And so I think this is good news for Israel. This is good news for America. This is good news for the world.
Yeah, absolutely. I know there are just personally a tremendous sigh of relief when that news came through. Let me hit on probably, I'd say probably the next biggest news of the week was Vice President Kamala Harris's interview with on Fox News with Bret Baier. And so many interesting exchanges took place. But one of those was pertained to whether or not Kamala Harris still supported the use of taxpayer dollars to help prison inmates or detained illegal aliens to transition from one gender to the other. And I think, frankly, she tried to dodge the question by claiming that those surgeries were also available during the Trump administration. I'd like to play this clip and get your reaction.
The Trump aides say that he never advocated for that prison policy and no gender transition surgeries happened during his presidency.
Well, you know what?
You've
got to take responsible for what happened in your administration.
Yeah, no surgeries happened in his presidency.
It's in black and white.
Would you still advocate for using taxpayer dollars for gender reassignment surgeries?
I will follow the law.
All right. So what do you think about her answer? And how do you think this affects how people perceive her, perhaps?
Yeah, I think it's a non-answer, Jody, and I think the kind of the thinking behind the Harris campaign was most polls show that she's beginning to slip, and so they're trying to take some calculated risk. And by going on Fox News, that was a calculated risk. But that was a non-answer, Jody, and so if they think there's kind of a moderate Republican who watches Fox News that they would convince with that answer, it's not going to happen. What's interesting, Jody, is, you know, Kamala Harris likes to say that my values have not changed. And I believe her to some extent on that. I actually pulled up the ACLU questionnaire from 4 years ago when she ran for president the first time. And she was actually asked about this, Jody. And here's actually what she said when she was asked about this question. She said, "It is important that transgender individuals who rely on the state for care receive the treatment they need, which includes access to treatment associated with gender transition. That's why, as Attorney General, I pushed the California Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation to provide gender transition surgery to state inmates. I support policies ensuring that federal prisoners and detainees are able to obtain medically necessary care for gender transition, including surgical care, while incarcerated or detained." She goes on to say, "Transition treatment is a medical necessity, and I will direct all federal agencies responsible for providing essential medical care to deliver transition treatment." Again, wow. Jody, I think that is just so obvious. This is where she stood a few years ago. She insists, this is her own words, that her values have not changed. I went back actually in a 2019 town hall, again, when she was running for president. She was actually asked, Jody, by a voter, would you support adding a third gender option for federal IDs? And she said yes, and went on to, again, trumpet her support of the whole transgender movement. You know, Jody, last thing I'd say about this, I think Americans are beginning to realize this is extreme, this is dangerous. You know, Christians, we know it's even worse than that, though, that getting on board with transgenderism is actually embracing an inversion of the created order.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, it's to be honest, and I say this in the right kind of way, you gave a lot better answer for her position than she did with Brett. I mean, you read her own words, what she really believes, while in the interview she tried to skirt around the issue. Yeah. But since we're on this topic of transgenderism, earlier this week, I know you've probably been following this, but FRC, Family Research Council, we filed a brief in an upcoming Supreme Court case known as the United States versus Scrimeti. This is the case from Tennessee that centers around a law there that prohibits minors with gender transphoria from receiving cross-sex hormones and puberty blockers and surgeries, that kind of stuff. What should our audience know about this case, this upcoming case? This is a pretty big deal, isn't it?
It is, and it's a big deal because the nation's highest court has finally agreed to weigh in. This has been all over the lower courts now for the last couple of years. Jody, there's now 21 states that have laws in place that don't allow minor children to get puberty blockers, cross-sex hormones, or even these physical surgeries. Jody, these are common sense laws. Before you're 18, you can't get a Tylenol from the school nurse without getting permission from your parents. You can't get a full-time job during the school year. You can't even get a Costco membership. There's all sorts of things you can't do before you turn 18. And this idea that you can make these life-altering decisions, that you can get essentially chemically castrated. Again, this will people who go through these, their lives are never the same after that. Jody, it's just a nightmare. And there's a whole movement now of detransitioners who went along with these surgeries a few years ago and are realizing that they've ruined their lives, they've ruined their bodies. And so the Supreme Court gets a chance to weigh in on this state law. This one in particular originates from the state of Tennessee, Jody. And, you know, we always say it, but elections have consequences. It's worth noting that as this case began percolating through the courts, the Biden administration, the Justice Department, jumped in and is now defending the folks who are trying to overthrow this law. And again, as Christians, Jody, we just need to realize God in His Word makes it really clear. Male and female, He created them. This idea that you can change your gender, it's, you know, because Christians, our hearts go out to people with gender dysphoria who truly confused by this, but we can't allow activists to rewrite our laws and put our children in danger. And again, this is a really important case, Jody. Oral arguments will be later this fall. We probably won't get a decision till next summer, but it's something to keep keep watching.
Yeah, we need to keep watching, and we need to encourage people to be praying about this, and that the Supreme Court will have wisdom as they move through this. I mean, they talk about a Pandora's box that could be open when we have more than two genders, or we recognize more than two genders. I mean, where does the insanity stop when you go down that? I also wanted to get your thoughts on this whole transgenderism. It's popping up everywhere, and it has so many different tentacles. This week, for example, Texas Senator Ted Cruz and his challenger in a debate, it came up. And the whole issue of men competing against women on sports teams. And, of course, Cruz has been very strong on that. But his opponent now actually has come out with an ad where he says that he doesn't want boys playing girls sports. So there's an obvious, or at least a very seemingly obvious backpedaling on this issue in that particular race. Is that happening with Democrats across the country? Are they backpedaling? Are they starting to recognize the dangers of this transgenderism, be it in sports or otherwise? Or is this just a political move?
Jody, I think it's just politics, and these are politicians doing the types of things that politicians do, unfortunately. We're seeing this in the Ohio Senate race as well. Sherrod Brown, again, the race you just mentioned in Texas. These are states that are red. It's already going to be kind of an uphill battle for progressive candidates to win these races. And so you're seeing folks like the challenger in Texas, Sherrod Brown in Ohio, kind of coming out and saying, oh, I'm not in favor of allowing boys to compete on girls' sports teams. I would never be in favor of that. Well, what's interesting is they have voting records, and when they've had a chance to weigh in on it, they've been on the side of the transgender insanity, Jody. And I do think, even though this is politics, I do think we are seeing a movement, a backlash. You know, when you think of LGBT, the T's always been the hard part for the activists to really sell to the American people. Because even in progressive cities, I don't know if you saw it, Jody, but President Trump did a town hall on Fox News with an all-women audience. And I think it was Harris Faulkner asked, you know, how many of you are concerned about boys being put on your girls' athletic teams? And every hand in the room went up. I can't imagine imagine they're all Republicans, Jody. I think this is just a common sense issue. And again, as a Christians, we understand when you start tinkering with this, you're tinkering with the very order of creation, the way God has set things up. And so, Jody, I think, again, this is a case probably of politicians being politicians. But I think the fact that they're backpedaling right now does show that even they know some of the positions they're pushing for are not sustainable or palatable to the vast majority of Americans.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, all of this comes while we are watching, Americans are watching. The trust in the media has now dropped, plummeted to an all-time low. Something that this was even accentuated, I think probably highlighted this week with the CBS News interview with Kamala Harris. And they also had an interview with Speaker Johnson, of course. But I wanted to play a portion of that clip and get your reaction to this. This is Kamala Harris on CBS.
But it seems that Prime Minister Netanyahu is not listening.
We are not going to stop pursuing what is necessary for the United States to be clear about where we stand on the need for this war to end.
But it seems that Prime Minister Netanyahu is not listening.
Well, Bill, the work that we have done has resulted in a number of movements in that region by Israel that were very much prompted by or a result of many things, including our advocacy for what needs to happen in the region.
I have no idea what that means, but what happened, CBS had, it gave her two chances at the same question. Your thoughts on this?
Yeah, well, and neither one of us actually have any idea what the vice president was trying to communicate there, Jody. And I don't think Americans do either. Unless it's abortion or transgenderism. Well, I guess not transgenderism anymore. She's trying to muddy those waters, too. So really, unless it's abortion, none of us really know what Kamala Harris believes or thinks on any issue. But, Jody, this does speak to an issue that's really important. Trust in our institutions is eroding, whether it's the courts, whether it's our school system, even the military, kind of the last institution that most people said that they thought they could trust. Why is that, Jody? And it's because of decisions that our leaders have made. I'm thinking of the military. Why are recruitment levels so low? Well, think of the woke ideology that's been introduced into the into our service branches, Jody. Think about the thousands of service members that were discharged because they didn't want to get the COVID-19 shot. Just even think of medical authorities, thinking of COVID, the lack of trust. Think of all of us that were told to wear masks and how none of that was actually based on science. So bottom line, Jody, as Christians, we believe in an objective order, right and wrong, and we believe in speaking the truth in love. And too often, people in positions of power are abusing their authority, and that is eroding trust we have. And that's not sustainable, Jody, for any society in the long term.
Absolutely. Well, I tell you, I'm just encouraged that the media has now dropped below Congress in having such horrible views from the American people, which, frankly, it's hard to believe. They've gotten worse than Congress. Director of FRC's Center for Biblical Worldview, David Clawson, always great to have you giving us a biblical perspective on what's happening in the news. Thank you. Hope you have a great weekend.
Thank you, Jody. God bless.
God bless you as well. And God bless each of you, our viewers, our listeners. Thank you so much for being a part of the program. Hope you have a fantastic weekend. Keep your heart set on the Lord. He's got you and me here for a purpose. Shine brightly. God bless. We'll see you next week here on Washington Watch.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council and is entirely listener supported. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action. For more information on anything you heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com.